So we have about 45 minutes for this session for Protection Product Pricing Rightful Revolution with Alan and Catherine, which I'll introduce very shortly. I know that Alan and Catherine are very keen that we make this as interactive as possible, so please do feel free to jump in with questions as we go along or after the presentation. There is a mic there, which if you could use, that would be great for questions. Please just say your name and just a reminder as well that all the sessions are recorded as well. So I'll start by introducing Alan. Alan Merton joined Deloitte as a partner in the Actuaries and Consulting Group in early 2016. He's an actuary who has always used his technical and financial expertise in the insurance industry to advise or lead businesses to improve performance. During his career, he's held corporate appointed actuary, CEO and board roles, as well as led various business functions within insurance and wealth management organisations. He has successfully stepped between major consulting firms and a variety of corporate environments over 30 years of experience. He's worked in developed and developing markets across three continents over his career, most substantially in the Asia-Pacific region. This enables him to bring an empathetic and pragmatic approach to supporting his clients with their business imperatives. Al's area of focus is consulting, leading and working with multidisciplinary teams on providing assurance and advisory services as an industry expert to senior executives in insurance and wealth management. His client engagements are focused on helping leaders improve the performance of their business. So welcome, Alan, and also Catherine. Catherine Edgar is a lead actuary for Montu, a fast-growing actuarial technology business headquartered in Wellington. Catherine is a qualified actuary with over 10 years of experience in the life insurance and superannuation industries, and much of that time has been spent working in actuarial consultancy at Towers Watson in the UK and at Deloitte in New Zealand before her move to Montu in late 2017. In her current role, Catherine's focused on helping life insurers to improve their pricing processes to enable more efficient and effective pricing, more strategic decision-making, and ultimately increased business value. In her former role as Associate Director at Deloitte, Catherine worked with a wide range of clients across a number of industries with a primary focus on life insurance, and her experiences included mergers and acquisitions, strategic advice, appointed actuary services, actuarial evaluations, financial reporting, embedded values, and capital and regulatory compliance support. So I will pass over to Alan and Catherine.
Thanks, Matt. Mm-hmm. Good morning.
We on? Yes, now we're on. So one thing you've learned today is consultants write long bios about themselves. Thanks for joining. We've had an uplifting last session. I presume most of you were in the last session on life insurance in this room and hearing all about the Royal Commission, how we've lost our social license, trust is down. We're going to talk a little more about something hopefully a little more uplifting and something we can have more influence on around pricing today. But if one thing it does evidence is that the world's going through a lot of change, and the topic of the forum is about evolution and natural selection, and we in our industry and in our companies need to change as well. So Catherine and I are going to give you a bit of a view of the changing in pricing. We'll talk a little bit about some of the change, but not too much on that. There are lots of other sessions today. Have we lost them? Yep, we've lost them. Oh, now back again. Pain points in life insurance pricing. And we'll start with a little bit of a view of how pricing works today, but particularly try and look at the forward possibilities. And today we'll be talking about individual protection pricing. How many in the room have heard the term VUCA? Oh, there's this amazing correlation of people sitting over there. VUCA is obviously the left-hand side of the room. So VUCA is a term that I'm hearing a little bit more of. I don't know where it actually came from, but you can see volatility, uncertainty, ambiguity, and complexity. So what are some of the changes that we've got going on? Well, we heard about the way the public is viewing us. We've heard about trust in our industry. We've heard about changing consumer expectations. But in our industry, we've got a lot of consolidation. Again, some speakers have mentioned that this morning. But also, we've got a number of new entrants, and the new entrants are coming in with different ways of viewing the market. Some of them are distributors more than insurers, but the value chain is shifting. We've got distribution clearly under pressure in our industry. But we've also got stuff that we used to think we controlled, product profitability problems. And for some of us who have been around a while, we'd probably be saying we've seen some of this before. I remember talking about income protection profitability or lack thereof 20 years ago and reactions at the time. And unfortunately, I think we haven't taken advantage of some of the tools at our disposal to work on that. So we're living in a VUCA world, as people say, and what that means is it's incumbent on us to also change. This drives the need for change. So how does pricing fit into this, and what are the objectives of pricing? So I've tried to start, we'll start on the right-hand side with customer. And the first one is probably the hardest thing for us, you know, perceived value versus price. You know, we've got a combination of factors that work against life insurance. One is that we're relatively low touch. You know, our main customer engagement on traditional life insurance products is actually when we sell it once and then when we send out a renewal notice. And most people don't have claiming. So we haven't got high engagement. So the concept of insurance and claiming on it is actually foreign to people. As we've seen, buy their product and many years later end up claiming and potentially have forgotten what they purchased, has become less relevant. Just wondering, can we do something about the microphone? Okay, thanks. But some of the objectives of pricing our products need to come back to making sure that we are providing fair value. The speaker from ASIC this morning commented on what, you know, in life insurance terms, we might call a present value of future benefits versus a present value of distributor payments versus a present value of profit. And if you've got a mismatch between those three things and, for example, distribution is receiving a lot, maybe there's a problem. But certainly if the customer is not receiving a fair chunk of that value, we need to step back and say, is this a product that's actually valuable to the customer, or do we need to change the perceived value? The distributor, we heard, again, a complex product. But how can we make the pricing simpler? How can we make it more transparent? How can we make the process of purchase easier through pricing? And at the moment, as we know, our pricing process is a technical process that sets a standard rate, and then we put most consumers through a separate part of the pricing process, the individual pricing process, where we ask them to fill out long forms. We'll come back to that. And finally, we've obviously got objectives for shareholders, not too many mutuals left, although the trendy term of peer-to-peer insurance, you know, some of us would say, well, that's a lot what mutuals look like. But again, we do operate for sustainability of businesses. That means the businesses need to earn a return on capital and be there to actually pay claims in future. So that's a simple snapshot of the objectives of pricing. Now let's look at some of the pain points.
No.
Yes.
Yes. Cool. Cool. So thanks, Al. And now that we've touched on some of the objectives of what we're trying to achieve with pricing, if we move on to some of the pain points that we experience in life insurance and pricing and how that inhibits us in achieving those objectives. So if we start on the left with the customer and distributor viewpoint, so one of the very first pain points is actually how difficult it is for a customer to get a price. So they need to go through a time-consuming and intrusive underwriting process. It takes a very long time. Often that process actually doesn't change the price all that much, so they've gone through what's essentially a pretty poor customer experience for a price that actually they could have been told a lot earlier in the process. So essentially just quite a slow, intrusive, and poor customer experience. When they do actually get a price, it's often complicated and it's hard for them to understand. And I think one of the key things is around both product and pricing is it's often viewed very much from the insurer perspective as opposed to the customer perspective. And so, for example, very much benefit level pricing as opposed to total coverage pricing and can be quite difficult for policyholders to understand. There's also a lot of lack of flexibility in terms of what policyholders can have in terms of both product, and obviously that links through to pricing, but there's not really an ability to modularize their coverage, not really any ability for changing in pricing over time, depending on changing of circumstances and so on. So there's quite a lot of lack of flexibility there for consumers. And then just another facet to that as well, often a lack of guarantee around what that pricing means and how it might change over time as well. In terms of an insurer viewpoint and some of the challenges there in terms of being able to come up with competitive and profitable pricing and sustainable pricing over time, one of the big problems is how long pricing analysis actually takes. So systems that are currently being used for pricing, they can be very slow and cumbersome, and it takes a very long time for pricing changes to be calculated, let alone then implemented. So it makes it very difficult to react quickly to competitive changes and to be able to have your strategic pricing strategy in place. So the second point here kind of really links to that. Not only is your pricing process slow and cumbersome, but you also need to fit in with other parts of the insurance company as well. So you've got your timing being impacted by timing of experience investigations, but also very much your timing of your price changes being impacted by how quickly you can actually implement your price changes, both in your policy admin systems and in your quoting systems, a lead time of many months from when you actually do your repricing to when it finds its place into the market. So essentially quite a slow and cumbersome process that insurers are dealing with. Linked to that, there's many tools and systems being used in different places and a lot of interactions and systems that don't talk to each other, which again make the process quite difficult. And again, lots of repeated iterations between different teams, lots of backs and forths, which extend the time and the effort involved. The other issue at the moment with the tools that are available for pricing, there's not really any optimization capabilities there. Pricing processes tend to be quite iterative and sort of moving towards what we think our different objectives are, change different parameters, rerun, et cetera, without really any kind of intelligent, fast optimization capability. And there also tends to be a lack of granular insights as well, which, again, makes it more difficult when you're trying to price for more personalized way for customers. And finally, there tends to be quite a limited consideration of customer behavior. So, for example, price sensitivity, elasticities, retention sensitivity, and so on. So there's a lot more analysis that could be done there in terms of understanding of customer behavior and what that means in terms of how you price your products. So it's a little bit of a download on some of those pain points, and I'll hand back to Al.
Do you want to flick them?
Yes.
So we'd be interested. We're happy to take questions as we go. You probably have to stand up, but even if you're not asking a question now, just have a think about some of those points. We'd be interested in any feedback you've got on what you see. It's probably worth, given consumer landscape, consumers don't set their standards by the product that they're purchasing today. They set their standards by what they experience more generally. And it's worth, we're all consumers in financial services, it's worth having a think about how our other peer industries actually work. I'll relay a story. It's now some years ago, but I joined a financial services diversified company, and I joined as the appointed actuary for the life company and the head of strategy for the subsidiary that did life insurance, banking, wealth management, and financial advice. And this was part of a large general insurer. And I was talking to my boss, who'd come out of banking, and saying, what sort of meetings should I go to every week? How do I get involved in the strategy for the business? And, you know, I knew in the life insurance side, he'd come out of banking. So the life insurance was fine and the wealth management was fine. And he started talking about that I should go to the pricing meetings for the banking part of the business. And I looked at him and said, what do you mean the pricing meetings? And he said, well, you know, we have pricing meetings on a regular basis. And me thinking life insurance, I don't think it's changed so much. You know, once a year we do a pricing exercise based on the new experience. And I said, so how frequent are the banking pricing meetings? And he said, well, not so frequent. We only meet every week. And it was a sort of take home to me of how differently different parts of the industry work. Now, they were pricing on two factors, and this is where banking, as an example, is very different, still developing, but they were looking at market factors, so interest rates particularly, but they were keenly focused on competitive position. So they actually ran around every week, not in a very algorithmic or automated way at the time, but they ran around understanding their pricing for competitors, but also they understood the funding that they needed from different products and how to optimise their portfolio. So they were meeting every week to try and reset their prices for consumers. Totally different to where we still are on life insurance. General insurers, much more sophisticated many years ago on the types of algorithms they used, but again, customer-based pricing, trying to adjust the prices based on customer behaviour. Health insurance, bit different in Australia, but if you think of non-community rated markets, where overseas health insurance, like, for example, we were talking about Discovery this morning, mentioned before the lack of regular contacts in life insurance. Health insurance has many regular contacts. So the value perceived by the client might actually be higher if we can provide good services in health insurance. And there's a general expectation in most markets that health insurance prices go up. We don't have that expectation built into life insurance. I would say that a lot of health insurance is not really insurance. It's actually just funding of expected payments and changing who pays for the health care. But there's certainly an element of that is insurance. And finally, life insurance. We've talked a bit about where we are, and although I think we've seen some changes, generally we're still intermediated in Australia. We're still not thinking directly to the customer. We're still not pricing on a frequent basis in anticipation or even in reaction greatly to customers. So in some respects, we're quite a way behind.
Thanks, Al. So on this next slide here, we've tried to do a bit of a mapping of the sort of journey of where life insurance pricing's kind of come from and where it might go into the future. There's a lot of information on this slide, so we're not going to talk through everything, but we'll kind of try and give you a bit of a sense of what we think. So on the left here is sort of embryonic, so the very early stage is much more, much less sophisticated pricing. So it's around where we see the technical pricing and repricing basis was very much cost plus, changes in rates were quite broad brush and done at quite a portfolio level, not very granular in terms of the assumptions that were there and the way the prices are set. In terms of the sort of level you're looking at, a big focus on new business and not necessarily a lot of focus on how changes affect your in-force, other than a focus to where products are in loss recognition, and little to no consideration, really, of customer behaviour. In terms of your competitive analysis, tended to be a lot more anecdotal and quite infrequent as well. Speed and frequency, as Al sort of touched on, often tending to be just a yearly review of pricing and very much scheduled, so not based on what's happened in the market or how competitors have moved, just based on a sort of timing of when those reviews might take place, so kind of very defined and infrequent. And then in terms of how teams would have tended to operate, very much separate silos between distribution, product and pricing. So lots of iterations back and forth between the different teams. So for example, the actuarial analysis being done in one place, competitive analysis being done in another, feedback then from other units, iterations back and forth for each scenario that you do. So taking many months for all of that process to kind of flow through. So that's sort of an embryonic kind of pricing picture as we see it. Then moving on to the evolving, and this is where I think we see most companies now have moved into this sort of space generally. But so you'd be looking at cost plus still pricing, but with cross-subsidy decisions being made, some allowance now for customer behaviour, and more starting to get more granular assumptions into your customer segments and your products. Again, starting to look more granularly at customer segments, starting to look more at bundles and what kind of the wider customer needs are, and starting to think more about in-force and new business and consistency between the two and how your pricing changes are affecting both sides. Again, still scenarios and iterations, but more targeted based on different financial outcomes. And then looking at competitive positioning, so starting to make that a lot more robust, getting feeds from data houses, potentially looking at quoting systems as well, and starting to do more granular competitive analysis comparisons, still generally within separate teams and a lot of iterations back and forth between your sort of technical pricing and your competitive analysis teams, but starting to become more in-depth. In terms of timing, potentially moving towards more regular monitoring, so perhaps every 3 months, but still changes being relatively infrequent and still taking a long time to occur. Again, with the teamwork, that's starting to happen in a more cohesive way, so starting to work more closely together within different teams, but still, as I said, that sort of quite iterative process and still things done relatively separate in different places. So that's sort of the status we currently see, and be interested in people's comments as well, reflecting back on that too. But I'll hand over to Al to...
So we'll talk a little bit more about some of the changes and how the pricing function can change to move towards the future. And as Catherine said, you know, no one company is in any of these stages. We see different ways of working in different companies. Some are very focused on the feedback they get from distribution and pulling that anecdotally, and others are beginning to actually take quote feeds and look at optimising to some extent, or trying to build elasticity models. But the future actually holds sort of a brighter future, I think, around the ability to use more data and to particularly automate. So at the moment, we're not really personalising, and there's a very interesting debate that hopefully we'll have some time for, is how much should we be personalising across the portfolio as opposed to a much more standardised set of technical rates with a small proportion of the portfolio than with customised pricing based on an underwriting or some other process. But certainly beginning to be able to personalise and also thinking across product holdings. I think we're already seeing most companies, rather than saying death prices, TPD prices, trauma prices, IP, we're certainly seeing one cross-subsidisation and sometimes that being an active and explicit decision, but also the consideration of how to price differently across bundles of products. Now, whether this is, to go back to the previous session, about the customer need or the distributor behaviour, another question, but we do work in an intermediated market primarily. We're not yet seeing customer behaviour incorporated, but we are beginning to see distributor behaviour, at least in terms of output around quotation decisions, but relatively weakly done still for most companies, just beginning to look at quote results and see which business is coming to us and which business did we quote but lose on. There's lots of talk about watches and phones and wearables. I don't think too much data is actually being pulled in, and again, thinking about the previous session, we need social license to be able to do that. But the ability to start taking information in and use that at different points in the chain, either pre-underwriting or as part of the underwriting process, or even as part of an in-force policy repricing process, that's again where we see things going. Our data scientists who come with some insurance industry, but often having worked in other areas which have been using stronger statistical techniques, they ask us life insurance actuaries, how come you don't put a health score on people and predict their health? So that might seem, you know, my first reaction was, well, hang on a minute, that seems a bit weird. But then you go, well, actually, that makes a lot of sense. Do we have the data to do it today, yes or no? How could we be in a position to be able to do that and to be able to create some of those objectives we talked about before, be in a position where we can provide point of sale response to individualised pricing? I'll flick through a couple of these. We're certainly seeing much more granular level of decision making and companies actually getting improvements that are material to their profitability through more granular level of pricing. That's already beginning to happen, but I think the ability to present that information and to use it and to make decisions, most actuarial teams are still working on the tools. It's still a lot of tables of numbers, maybe some charts, not necessarily drop-down boxes and Tableau analysis and drill-down tools that are shared across distribution, product, and the pricing teams. And I think, again, that's where we're headed. You know, we'll come back to it later, but we don't see a lot of automation of the process, the whole process. And we can envisage a world where the robot's pumping out the prices for endorsement, the low-risk type of changes, which are done regularly, are actually just automated, pumped through to the AA, maybe for a delegated decision. But you know, at the moment, we see lots of manual processes and a move towards automating and having skilled people spending time where their time is more warranted. So that's a bit of a view of the future. We'll just talk a little bit through the stages and some of the progressive changes. So a very broad pricing flow is up on the screen, and this reflects more today that somebody's compiling the data, they're getting some assumptions, some experience investigations done, they're setting assumptions. We're using primarily internal data or some industry data to inform ourselves. We're not actually doing it that frequently for most assumption sets, and maybe that's valid because we don't have rapid changes in some of the experience. But we're basically driving our pricing timetable mostly around when the experience investigations are happening, and they're happening for other reasons. Now, some would argue that the liability valuations are very important and our capital calculations are very important, but they don't actually change the end result of what we do as a company. What changes the end result of what we do as a company is pricing. So I'd actually say we should be flipping it and be thinking more about it. We then derive some premium rates, and we then start flipping things backwards and forwards. We throw a first set of rates across the wall to the product team. The product team looks at them. They think about the phone calls they've had from the distribution guys. They might talk to the distribution guys who talk about an anecdote of the big dealership that last week couldn't sell our product because it was uncompetitive, and they'll have a bit of a debate, and then it goes back over the wall with some changes, and we go through this iterative process of setting technical rates and then trying to do a competitive analysis, along the way often fluidly setting our pricing philosophy and thinking about what we want to optimise. And then finally we throw these rates out through various systems into distribution, and often this is a long, tedious, complex process. How many people have to schedule their mainframe price changes more than 3 months in advance? There's a few in the room. I suspect the rest are consultants. The companies that have legacy systems, one of the barriers is not just the calculation of prices, but the ability to implement them. We can't ignore those types of things. So what we'll do now is step through a few changes that we can see happening, some of this already happening. Let's start with compiling data and assumptions. So we do feel we need lots of data, but we still have this process. If you look at the end of the chain, the pricing that the customer gets, think back to that objective we said, that should be clear and transparent, easy for the distributor, and ideally when the customer says, I want a product, they know what the price is. At the moment, that's not what we do. We actually set a technical price and then we put somebody through an underwriting process. So if we were actually beginning to collect more data at various stages and use external data, we could actually be eliminating some of that paperwork or some of the process. And rather than ask everybody to fill out the 14-page application form, how could we ask certain people to fill out a short form or go through a telephone call that has a short form underwriting, because we've used information that we already have. So if we start collecting more data at a different point, we can actually change the process. So where does some of that data come from? Well, I've mentioned already wearables. It could be from wearables, but it could be external data feeds. Again, some of this might be getting the right permission from customers and distributors at the right points in time. It could be that we're getting data from previous insurers, which we typically don't do today. But if we're going to get this data, we need to also automate the way we're using it. And this again goes to the point that a lot of the tools to analyse data have changed. If you grew up using tools like SAS 20 years ago, there are different tools that make it easier for us and our people to work on using larger data sets and to make decisions off the back of it. So we're seeing the beginning of the possibility to collect more data on individuals and start applying that into the pricing processes. So what does that mean? Well, maybe we can start dealing with some of these issues. I'm not going to claim that I've got the answer to the mental health issues that were raised earlier and how do we change our terms and conditions and our pricing. But that example of, if you work more than 50 hours, you wouldn't be able to buy insurance because that goes against the terms and conditions of our policies. well, if we have more data and we're using it properly, can we actually price on the basis of people who are in certain professions who work certain hours, like all the hardworking actuaries in the room? And instead of being one size fits all very much in the way we go to market with a limited set of rating factors and then again the complex underwriting process, how can we actually start customising what we do and create translatable and communicable results but using information that's available to us? The other thing that's important about this is we are continuing to see pressure on distribution. We will continue to see pressure on distribution. We may see pressure on remuneration of distribution more than we have already. And what is more important is how can we make distributors more effective in their job? Not necessarily pay them more, but make them more effective so that they can actually earn a reasonable living for the service that they're providing. And some of that, again, comes back to being able to present things to them that make their life talking to a consumer easy, more easy. And that will also translate as the direct market opens up, how some of our basis of working with customers can change and support a direct market. Pass it back to you.
Yep, thanks, Al. So this next point really links nicely into what Al's just been talking about, but by having more data on customers, by having better understanding of customer behaviour and better understanding of customer needs, that actually could potentially allow a new step to be put into this process where there's actually a stage of deciding on additional product features, tailoring new product features to meet customer needs by now having the capability to price these in a more granular and customer-specific way. So we see that that's sort of an extra benefit from starting to use some additional data and not only being able to price better, but being able to identify and add features that are more, that are suitable for customers and have a more customer-centric view. And in that way, of the impact of that as well on distributors, and as Al sort of touched on just now, being able to provide more products that can be distributed and are better suited for customers. So then the next stage on here around deriving premium rates. So here, I think there's a lot of scope for having tools that are much more suited for the pricing process than what is currently being used at the moment. So having tools that can run much more quickly and are much more sophisticated. So tools that can deal with all of the additional data we're talking about, can deal with much more granular assumptions, can deal with allowing for the customer behaviours in different ways, and that can run very, very quickly. And by having tools like that that allow you to run a lot more pricing scenarios in a much shorter time would enable you to reach more strategic and optimal pricing than what can be done at the moment with quite slow tools and very iterative processes that just mean essentially often almost running out of time before you can reach the sort of solutions that you're looking for. By also integrating that with competitive analysis, so having your competitive analysis and your profitability analysis all into one place, that would allow you to see the complete picture and make those pricing decisions, again, removing a lot of that iteration and then allowing all of the right people to be around a table and make those strategic decisions with all of the information that they need. With all of that in one place, it also opens up the possibilities for optimization. So setting what your strategic priorities might be, running that through a clever tools with optimization algorithms that then can give you an answer of this is how your premium rates, you might want to make your premium rates look to get this outcome. So for example, it could be I want to maximize my sales without having any reduction in EV, but I would like my competitive positioning to be XYZ in these segments, running that through an optimization algorithm and that coming up with some pricing recommendations on the basis of what you're looking to achieve. And that sort of approach can make the whole process a lot more strategic and make it a lot more efficient as well. So that's those are some of the things we see as in terms of possibilities for the pricing process going forward and really changing the way pricing is done and making it a much more strategic process. So onto competitive analysis. I think we've touched on this and some of our vision on it at various stages as we've spoken, but being able to make competitive analysis a much more automated process and bringing in the data feeds from the various different sources. I mean, we talk a little bit about a vision of it being something that could be done daily, whether that would be through robotic process automation or natural language processing, pulling in information from all the different places that you'd want and having an automated competitive analysis ready there for you to look at. That would enable competitive analysis to be done on a very regular basis. Your monitoring could be as frequent as you want. So it both allowing you to react much more quickly to market changes and also freeing up a lot of resource to be able to focus on other things. So, for example, investigations and market analysis on product design and strategy, and your competitive pricing piece is just already there for you to feed into that. And as I mentioned already, we see that really as needing to be integrated as well as possible into the overall pricing analysis. So that you can make those sorts of strategic decisions with all of the tools in your toolkit effectively. I think that's back to you.
So a lot of this is about shifting it from managing a process that we have to go through to actually trying to drive a process that helps the end customer and distributor. And that does mean, ideally, we've used the phrase a few times, freeing up the skilled resources that we have who are basically managing process and output and managing iterations to try and use tools and processes to actually start thinking about how we might do things differently. And some examples around, you know, being able to customise our product. Today, again, we primarily sell a ratings house, 5-star product. Similar, we get the person to customise, they're some insured. But we don't, for example, make it easy for the distributor to option that up and down based on the health insurance that the person has, the general insurance cover that they have, their employment status and what coverage they have through their super fund or through their workers' comp. All of that is the process that an advisor has to try to think through, with many advisors probably not thinking through it properly. So if we can actually turn our pricing basis and our coverage models into more personalised answers and produce that at the point of sale where the advisor can use it, we've actually got a better outcome from the customer. At the moment, we're seeing the general insurance industry start to move to provide, rather than home and contents as a package, slivers of insurance. So when you need something, you get it. Now, is there a parallel on life insurance? Well, perhaps there is, but could we price that today using the tools that we have? Could we deliver that to the front end? No. So if we're going to be anticipating some of the changes, we need to actually start working differently. So a view of the future is actually taking a lot of these different tools, processes and data that we have available or could get the trust and permission from customers and distributors to start changing the way we price. That would allow us to meet some of those objectives that we put up earlier around the customer needs, the distributor needs, and hopefully also the shareholder needs around profitability. So some of these tools exist. We see a lot of companies pulling together somewhere between profit liability valuations, maybe pricing versions of those profit tools, then lots of stuff in Excel or other tools to try and create profitability views. Then they pull something from the research houses, they produce papers, they merge it together, they try and link using Microsoft Office tools, send the report or send a piece of paper or an email with an attachment and throw that across the line. This is that time-consuming iterative process. And at the moment, you know, it's very typical for just that pricing process for new business products to be a 3-month-plus process from the time of saying, I've got my experience investigations available, I now want it repriced and go to market. Some of these tools exist, and this is just an example of one that actually puts on the same page the financial dynamics for the shareholder and the competitive dynamics. It doesn't actually on this page show the present value of benefits to the customer or to the distributor, so we haven't quite got the measure here. But on the left-hand side, what you've got is the base pricing using last year's premium rates and for the various products. On the right-hand side, an optimization's been done using the system. The objective was a very simple one. It was maximise premium income. Hopefully not everybody's just trying to use that as their objective, although for fast-growing new insurers, expense overrun is probably a bigger problem than other problems, so actually that might make the most sense for optimisation for a set of premium rates. But the system's then pumped out the ability to see a comparison. And, you know, the types of tools with dashboarding and shading to show competitive position, but also the financial outcomes for the shareholder. So that's a tool that exists. There are other tools, so we're not saying that's the one you must use, but if you're still sitting using Excel and trying to run 6 model points or 10 model points to look like the whole portfolio of new business last year and then do a final version in profit to look at the last year's new business portfolio and what the changes would be, there's new ways of doing it, and companies are beginning to adopt these.
So having said all of that, what are the barriers to change and how hard could this be? Because I think, yeah, it's an exciting vision of the future, but there's a long way to go, and there's a lot of things that would need to be overcome to do that. So, I mean, one of the first that we've listed down here actually is all comes around personalization, and what issues do we find when we start to get much more granular in our pricing and much more individualistic onto each individual customer? What problems do we run into with that? Do we begin to defeat the point of insurance and lose pooling of risk? And also, what does that mean for accessibility? So for people who are very poor risks, do they just become priced out of the market and we start to see some of the problems that you see in general insurance with things like flood risk areas? I'm so interested to get some thoughts from everyone on that. Maybe perhaps at the end, we've got a few questions we might ask you all. Just to warn you now. So what other problems might there be? So regulation and restrictions around what might be possible. And I think one of the key areas around that is, it was touched on in the last session as well, but it's around rating houses and the ways in which if you might do something innovative with your products or your pricing, but if they can't be understood or rated in a similar way to what to other products in the market, then that can be a big hindrance in terms of the changes you're trying to make. Legacy systems, obviously that's a big one in terms of the difficulty and the cost and time taken to change from legacy systems. And I guess just some of the inertia within large organizations in terms of being able to do that, particularly when you're also trying to do your BAU at the same time. And, you know, nothing stops while you're trying to move to a new system. So there's a lot of challenges and change management that would be required around that. Similarly, another barrier is around the other legacy systems within the organization. So, for example, we talked before about how implementing your pricing changes can be drastically delayed by your policy administration systems and actually being able to implement prices. So the problem is bigger than just changing your prices and your pricing analysis, but how do you actually get those into the market and how do you deal with those other legacy systems? Change management, I guess we've touched on a little bit. There's also the kind of cultural aspect of that and the people change management side and getting the business to change the way it approaches things, which obviously is not an easy thing to manage either. Again, Al touched on there's a challenge around if we want to be able to use external data and have more data about our customers to be able to design products better for them and to price better, we need to have the trust from customers to be able to do that. And obviously there's some challenges to overcome there, particularly in the current environment. So those are kind of some of the key ones that we see, but again, interested in any other thoughts shortly. So just in summarizing up, a possible future that we as actuaries could potentially be facilitating would be to be moving towards having dynamic pricing that's customer-specific, optimal, and delivered immediately as final, as opposed to being quite a slow and iterative process with underwriting, slowing the decisions, et cetera, et cetera. Personalized coverage and pricing based on the customer's own status rather than more generic factors, and potentially much more product choice for customers around slivers of coverage or different modules of coverage, adjustable based on customer needs and priced appropriately. And again, a similar point around changing over time as well, and being able to change your coverage and change your pricing based on behavior over time, and some of the things that Discovery are doing as per the talk this morning. Automated dashboard reporting on outcomes and hotspots, and just a much more efficient process by which all of the analysis and information is ready and available and allows actuaries to no longer be spending all of their time on the analysis and using old systems and processes and tools, but actually being able to use much more fast and automated processes and actually spend their time on the analysis and the strategic decision-making and helping the business in reaching their strategic decisions rather than on some of those time-consuming and manual tasks. So those are kind of a bit of our vision around what things might look like, and Al's got, as the last slide, a little bit of a real-world example.
What might it look like? Well, some people caught the plane from Melbourne. They were probably on the way to Melbourne Airport at 5 o'clock this morning. Potentially the future, 5 a.m., there's an automatic bot running, collating the data. It's running the actuarial models based on the updated information from yesterday. It's pulling in the quotes that were sent out yesterday and the actual feedback on the results of what happened with the quotes from a month ago and the quotes yesterday. And that output is then collated and sent off to the analytics engine. That's then staged onto a Tableau or a Business Insights server, and it pulls in some of the sales retention information, creates some dashboards. They're refreshed. There's then a natural language generator that looks at the results and says, basically creates the version of the report that relates to the information that's been prepared, and that goes off to the various heads of the business as a series of dashboards with some initial commentary all automatically produced, so that when they're arriving to work, they can start looking at this and seeing what happened yesterday. They can drill down, they can dive across, they can look granularly, they can run what ifs, and then the pricing actuary who's responsible for setting the prices actually does some variance analysis, decides that there's a tweak that's worth doing off the back of the information that's been changing over the last month, and sets in place a little pilot for a pricing change for 1 week. Kicks that off, looks at the delegated authority from the appointed actuary and says, I don't need authority for that, I have authority, and off they go and kicks it off and it's out in the market. Now that sounds a little futuristic. You can ask the question of, well, what's the role for the actuaries in the future if this is all happening? There's still judgment here. But most of the tools to do that sort of thing are already available. And our question to you guys would be, how many of them are you using in your pricing functions? So I think we'll leave it there, Matt, and happy to take comments or questions.
So thanks, Alan and Catherine, for some very interesting, thought-provoking ideas there. We're technically at time, but I think we'll be given some more time because this session started late. I haven't heard the bell, so I would encourage a few questions. Yes, please.
Okay, thank you very much for your talk. My background is I worked in the UK for a number of years. And when I came over to Australia to see the pricing and saw that companies only pricing once a year, I was frankly shocked. So in the UK, we used to price about, on our protection business, about 10 times a year at least. And we used to have a competitive pricing meeting every week. And then we make a decision on what to price. We would do the pricing in a day. This was about 10 years ago. We'd do the pricing in a day, get it signed off in a day, and go live a week later. And we knew then some companies were turning that around in 2 days. But I think the difference is that the UK market was guaranteed prices. So what you end up doing was you're pricing for that price for that customer then, but you weren't passing it back to other customers. And I think this market is very different because of the YRT nature, the reviewable nature, and the fact that you're not just pricing for new customers, you're pricing for existing ones, and all of that brings forward into what you do with renewal notices and renewals. So I think that, for me, was the reason why it's so much different. But, other markets do this and have been doing it for a decade plus, so.
Yeah, and at risk of being a bit controversial, I'll say I think that reason you gave is actually a little bit of an excuse, because there are lots of companies that are just pricing their new business and leaving their in-force as priced much more. At some point they're aligning, and clearly some companies are not. They are actually passing back. But there are many organisations that are still not pricing frequently but are only looking at new business. So I think there are other reasons which we've talked about.
Once again, thank you for the presentation. I'd like to hear comments on two areas. One is price matching and price discounting. which is increasing in the insurance industry. You know, banks have been doing it for ages. So the prices in quoting software and what you see from other companies published isn't actually the price that's sold at anymore, so it makes it very difficult to do a lot of this competitive thing. And the other area, which once again is getting more in the life insurance sector, it's been elsewhere, is what I call the abuse of apathy, in that between in-force and new business, there is increasing use in the insurance industry, as there is by electricity retailers, telephone companies, banks, other insurance companies, to basically put the rates up on the in-force, knowing that there's an apathy of people to actually swap and try to look elsewhere.
So I might start briefly. I think one of the biggest shift in both of those comments, Eddie, is that we've always done cost plus. We've been trained to think of the costs of the services we provide and build up a price from there. And actually, it's only relatively recently that we've really actively started looking at competitors, but what we haven't looked at is that perceived value versus price. Now, one answer to the apathy thing is whether people perceive the value. I think that's a really good warning call for the industry. It's absolutely clear that the banks are being targeted for what they're trying to do around things like term deposits and just roll people at the same old terms. And so we need to be much more vigilant around not just being apathetic or taking advantage. But I do think we have to understand distributor and customer behaviour better to know whether that was a choice of a customer to move or not move, or a lack of choice of the customer to move or not move. And when we have more understanding of that, then we can do a better job pricing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to add anything?
Oh, I think we're probably about to get kicked out.
I think you've got an extra minute if you want to respond. Or.
I agree with you in terms of the in-force versus the new business and the risks around that, because I think that's a big reputational risk as well in terms of, and you touched on it, other industries do it too, but, you know, giving better deals for your new business customers versus your in-force and so on. And I think that's something that insurers should definitely be considering. And then not only whether they're passing back their rates and how they're treating the different ranges of customers, but the impacts that that is having. And I think that's an area where there's not been a lot of focus at the moment, or at least not much sophisticated focus in terms of, as you're changing your prices, what impact is that having on your retention and how does it change your behaviour in your in-force, as well as how it's changing the behaviour of your new business as well.
And just one thing, if you're interested in this, robots and how our work will change, there's a session this afternoon that you might want to go along to.
Well, thanks both for a very, please thank our presenters for a very thoughtful session.
Thanks very much. Thank you.